It's time now to get behind the headlines of this week's Hendersonville Lightning with editor and publisher Bill Moss.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com as we get behind the headlines of this week's Lightning. Good morning, Mr. Bill. Nice to have you joining us again via Skype as we practice our six-mile separation.
There you go. Good morning, Mark. Glad to be back here on Lightning Radio once again.
Well, business may be slow everywhere in our community, but the news is never slow, even at a time like this. And, of course, the Lightning continues to come out every Thursday and continues online every day as well, 24 hours a day. So let's get behind the headlines of this week's Lightning. What do you say?
Yep, you're right. My phone continues to blow up, and we pursue some enterprise as well in covering, of course, the COVID crisis. Lots of COVID coverage to start out with, and that's not all. We got more than that as well in this week's issue.
Great. So hang on to this week's episode. Also, let's start with right here. What's on the front page? County's cases count is high, according to, quote, because we've been looking. Talk to us about that, Bill.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I thought it was. And that's, I guess that's why we made a headline out of it. I thought that maybe the most salient point was Steve Smith, who is really good at talking about the crisis, the threat, if you will, in a common sense way and in a sort of a public service climate, I would say. And he'll openly say, I know this makes people nervous. I know. You know, they wonder why, because they held this press availability on Monday afternoon, one day after they confirmed these 23 new COVID-19 cases at the Cherry Springs Village Assisted Living Center there on Clear Creek Road. And it was really good, chock full of good, solid, factual information, which you don't always get in this kind of crisis. Steve Smith, and who is the public health director, Crystal O'Dell, which is the terrific nursing director, the great medical director they have there, Diana Curran, and Chris Parsons, the top infectious disease specialist of Pardee UNC Health. And so his point was, one reason maybe we've got more cases, or at least have confirmed more, not necessarily have more, is we have been looking at these, at the places that are potential hot zones, such as an assisted living or congregate care kind of place. Then that was the main point.
And we get to this sort of, I don't want to say argument, but the decision of, you know, we're finding more cases simply because we're looking for more cases, correct?
They've been really focused in their surveillance, what they call their surveillance. They talked about one of the questions is, what was the process to test residents and staff at Cherry Springs Village? You can get your Lightning or go online and read the answer to that. There was a question about a staffer that was sick and sent home, and it turns out, I guess, her son was also an employee there. And actually, this question wasn't that, and went and the son went back to work. There was a long explanation of that from Steve Smith and from Crystal O'Dell as well, that there's actually some CDC guidelines basis for that for healthcare workers, because, and this is Crystal O'Dell speaking, and because a healthcare worker is going to have more exposure than the normal public, there is some guidance that allows an asymptomatic health worker who has had contact with someone with suspected COVID-19 to continue to work as long as they're asymptomatic. And I thought this was the most important point that she made, and also probably common sense. If we didn't allow for that, we would have critical staffing issues within our hospitals, because you can just imagine if you say, well, somebody's been exposed potentially, that's just about everybody in the whole hospital. I mean, staffers. So,
sure.
Explain why that is so. Is any of the three deaths associated with Cherry Springs? Mr. Smith says, I think all three deaths are associated in some way with a long-term care facility, but to my knowledge, they are not associated with Cherry Springs. We know we've had in both Cherry Springs and the Bryan Center diagnoses, confirmations of COVID. We know the location, as far as I know, we know the location for certainty of only one death, and that was the one last Thursday night at Pardee that we can talk about in just a minute.
Well, truly, because that does lead us right into another story that you have here on page two, which is the county sees its first coronavirus fatality.
Yeah, this is more detail. Yeah. In part, really credit to Carolina Village Administrator Kevin Perez, who gave really a very detailed explanation, description of exactly what happened with a Carolina Village resident, an independent living resident, who came down with what was diagnosed at that time as pneumonia on March 21, admitted to Pardee, discharged from Pardee back to the Carolina Village Medical Center, got worse again, and was readmitted to Pardee, where that patient died this past Thursday night, a week ago. There was concern and some fear that there could be an infection outbreak, at Carolina Village because of that. But as we say in the story and elsewhere, actually, we mentioned this in a very positive way in an editorial, that Carolina Village has been very proactive and aggressive in their prevention measures. And Kevin Perry's a couple of days later, I lose track of exactly what day everything happened.
Right.
I think it was by Sunday afternoon or later Saturday afternoon after we had posted this story. Kevin notified the Lightning that they had no confirmed cases at that time. So that's pretty good and pretty amazing given the threat and how contagious the COVID-19, the coronavirus is.
Wow.
There's a lot more detail on pages 2 and 3 of that situation as well.
Okay. So speaking of, you know, what some of our companies are doing right now in light of this, let's go back to page one again. Your next headline here, let's talk about Pardee, what they're going through. Pardee execs take pay cut, and they're now on flex hours, like a lot of businesses are doing around here.
Well, that's exactly right. And it's been a little bit counterintuitive, I think, that because we've been hearing now for, 5 or 6 weeks about the surge, about the hospitals, both Pardee and Advent Health, really bracing for this, getting ready for this, and you might have assumed that the next part of that would be maybe staffing up for this. But that's not, as the Lightning reported exclusively, I think it was in last week's issue, not exactly so, because they've had so much fall off, an almost complete fall off in elective surgeries, most urgent care visits, which tend to be more profitable than just a regular, in a lot of cases, than just a regular hospital admission, or certainly a lot of ER visits turn out to be charity care. All of those have fallen off, if not to zero, much closer to zero than the Pardee financial team would like. And that's put a huge amount of financial pressure, more costs. Anybody can see all the extra work that, of course, a hospital, the public health department, any doctor's office is doing just in prevention measures, more costs and yet less revenue. So their solution was take a pay cut. And this is the top, the higher paid executive, the C-suite folks, are making the corporate suite are taking this 20% pay cut for what's called selected salary team members. In some cases, it will result in a reduction of hours. I would say for the top executives, that's certainly not true. You know, they're working night and day on this.
Sure.
And other personnel rank and file down the line is going to see, if they're not already, flex hours, work less because we just don't have the business. We don't have the patient. We don't have the census in the beds. If this surge does come, at this point, I'd say by no means a certainty, but if the surge that some projections have been forecasting, if that surge comes, that those flex hours would go, you know, right back up. So yeah. So it would be all hands on deck and all nurses and doctors on duty to manage that surge.
Let's stay on. Let's do one more story here before our break and stay on coronavirus crisis and COVID-19 with what's going on. The county had their first live meeting this coming Tuesday. We carried it live here on the Q. We'll continue to do that as well. And of course, they took questions and answers from folks in the community, which you can email to the day before or up to the day before. And one of the stories you have on here based on that meeting is, will the county crack down on non-essential travel? They had a lot of questions about that.
A lot of questions, yeah. And again, that's what we focused on is that seems to be just from the public at large.
Yeah.
The most as I've got people that are I guess I'd say they're trying to tattletale, or they're calling or sending emails to the Lightning saying what's up with these crowded big box stores, and what's up? I've even had one that said, what's up with people walking in the park, which I think is not only permitted, but the public health director said among the few things he said you should go out for were obviously a job if you're in an essential job, grocery shopping in as limited a way as you can, and to get exercise. Well, I think walking in the park is exercise, but there is a lot of concern about whether these people, I had one person tell me that they saw people at Lowe's who just seemed to be, quote, browsing,
yeah,
which didn't seem to be an essential trip to Lowe's.
Yeah.
But that you can read the answer there. They don't have the personnel. There's not enough police officers and sheriff's deputies in Henderson County, or probably not in the state of North Carolina, to go to every store, big box or otherwise, make sure that the spacing is being practiced, and to make sure that only a certain number of people. Some stores, Steve Smith again answered, this was one of the ones to answer this question. He was out in the community at retailers on Saturday and found kind of what he described as varying degrees of management of that. Some stores doing a good job of, let's say it's a great big store like Walmart, maybe 100 people can be in there, but not more than that. I don't know what the number would be, but he said some stores were doing a very good job. I've heard that Sam's is actually keeping a real close count, and people have to wait outside before they can get in, before others leave, and then they can get in. So you can read the answers to that. How many cases are pending? That number has gone way down because the turnaround time. How many tests are pending is actually what that should be. The turnaround time has gone down. Distance. It was said that the distancing has been working. They think too. That's the reason we don't have more cases and more hospitalization. Some people are frustrated that they cannot get a COVID test. Those are basically being rationed. You can't just call a doctor's office and say you want one. They had to shut down the screening site because it was because they needed those tests for the highest priority. That is hospitalized patients or obviously symptomatic patients and healthcare workers, among other priority cases that will get a COVID test.
And Bill, you may know this, but I have been told now of two different situations where someone has literally called into their doctor, gave them the symptoms that they had, and were told that they basically had it and to stay home. No test whatsoever. So I don't know if you've heard that or not, but that's I've heard of that in two different occasions, and I'm going to say not necessarily in Hendersonville or Henderson County, but right here in Western North Carolina.
I think that is the advice they give. I mean, I'm not a medical doctor. Don't go by my advice, but I think Mr. Smith and others have said what that that person is symptomatic,
yep,
but not seriously ill, they can, you know, they're not having really challenged breathing difficulties and so forth. Any travel that person makes outside the home poses a risk for,
yeah,
everyone else then that person comes into contact with. So, again, call the public health department or call Pardee or read the many, many thousands of CDC and World Health Organization's resources for the answer on something like that. But I think that's going to be the advice. If you,
yeah,
can, if you have the corona, if you have COVID-19 in a way that's manageable in your home, you know, with the proper, I'm sure, consultation, whether it's telehealth or in whatever means, with a physician, then I think that's where they want you to stay.
Yep. The one that I know specifically was told basically that they had it, stay at home, and if conditions got worse and they had difficulty breathing, to go to the emergency room. And that's exactly,
yeah,
what they're doing. So,
yeah,
interesting.
I'd say barring somebody coming to their house to, you know, maybe administer a test. And that's, I don't think that can happen because I don't think there's enough testing kits to do,
right,
it that way.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, Bill, we're going to take a break and we'll be back with some maybe COVID related stories, but not necessarily directly coronavirus. That's coming up. You are listening to Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com.
Lewis Williams & Sons is the area's largest distributor of Makita tools.
And we are back with Lightning Thursdays with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. Bill, again, COVID or coronavirus related, the city is delaying the parking deck. Talk to us about that story.
I guess you could say there's little that's not related, even if not directly. This is related to the coronavirus economic crisis, you might say. We've,
yeah,
got elsewhere on the website. We have a story from out of Raleigh that someone reported to the legislature that if we're not already in a recession, we're close to one. So
yep,
everyone hopes that is a short term recession, because there's a decent possibility for a fairly quick bounce back, I think. But as you say, this story is the council delays this much talked about parking deck idea. No mention in that meeting. We'll continue to bird dog what's going on with the hotel, but no mention directly about whether that's moving ahead right now. This is going to be kind of a partner project of the hotel. And the other news they made in that meeting was to shave off one floor of the parking deck and make it four floors instead of five, and that lowered the cost a little bit. I think it was by around $1 million to $6.9 million. They were going to move ahead with the purchase of that Jackson Law Firm property, which is on Church Street, for $1,150,000, and postpone the purchase of some Fazio property, which is the property directly across from the Dandelion there,
right,
for $800,000. That one, I think the Fazio was willing to postpone. The other one, I think the Jackson property, the seller of that wanted to go ahead and close on that sale. So the council agreed to that, but that's on hold, like a lot of things right now.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of things on hold. Well, speaking of things on hold, or that they seem to be on hold for a long time, let's go to an Ask Matt. Of course, one of the favorite weekly columns here on in the Hendersonville Lightning, and this week's question is: will NCDOT ever finish filling in the median on US 64 East next to Walmart?
Yeah, <it is. laughs> this is kind of a perennial.
Yeah,
Ask Matt gets lots of questions. A lot of them are about a blight and ugly things we see riding around. The people want to know. Matt Madison gives a real good, pretty complete answer as to how much they've done so far. He says they've done a little cleanup. This picture he made doesn't show too much of that as far as I can tell. But he says, you observed for the past several years that a scrubby canyon between two sections of highway, a magnet for tailpipes, hubcaps, and so lands is by definition a landfill. But he talks about there's really not, he's not very optimistic about this work getting done. It was interesting. He reports that the tree board had once planted a bunch of trees in that median, but they were lost years ago to when they made the turn lanes. And that was a long time ago when they made the turn lanes, those left turn lanes for turning into the Walmart shopping center. The tree board says it's willing to do what it can to help replant trees. But Matt says his sources at NCDOT indicate that no landscaping enhancements are planned. So there you go. Some 37,000 vehicles per day get to look at a blighted, not beautified median.
Well, and what's interesting about that, too, is there has been some work going on over there, but not in the median, but across the way, in between on the other side of where the original Lizard's Thicket building was, on the other side of it, not the Walmart side. They've been digging huge drainage or something out there. So I don't know what that is. I'll have to send a question to ask Matt, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Is that too far away from the interchange? Yeah, I guess that's too far away from the interchange to be part of that interchange.
Yeah, it is.
That sounds like a good one for ask, Matt.
Yeah, I've had a few people ask me, Mark, what is that? Surely you know what that is. Nope, but I know somebody who will. Let's move on to something else, and this, not necessarily COVID-related, and that is on 7th Avenue. The building there that used to be, I think, First Gear Transmissions, Distillery Out, Auto Works In. I didn't realize there was a distillery coming.
No, back last summer, this has a really interesting twist and turns to it.
Yeah.
Back last summer, the owners of the White Duck Taco Shop, which is that really successful chain of, I don't know, a half dozen or more, a taco shop that they say we are not a Mexican restaurant, kind of like tapas or that kind of stuff. And one of them, this is not to be confused with an employee manager of the White Duck Taco Shop that plans to open a White Duck Taco Shop.
Right.
Which Lightning was the first to report back around Thanksgiving. That one is still underway. That has nothing to do with what this was going to be, not a White Duck Taco Shop, by the owner, Ben Mixon, and his co-owner, Laura Royce. But they had filed a rezoning application and site plans and request for the proper zoning for a distillery. I think it was going to be a barbecue restaurant, a club, and a hemp growing lab, if you can imagine, on this site, which is about 8,600 square feet. The first thing that happened was they had trouble getting sufficient parking to meet the zoning code requirements, and that kind of ran aground. And then worse than that, Mr. Mixon died unexpectedly on February 17 while on vacation in Florida at age 42. So the property owners turned to Eric Goodman of Southern Commercial Real Estate and Doug Trusillo of Trusillo Commercial LLC of Asheville to lease it. John McMurray at AutoWorks said that seemed like that would be a great location. I need more space. There will be more room for us to expand. It'll be a better waiting kind of environment for customers. And so there you go. They moved and opened over there last week. It's a relocation. They'll no longer have the Pine Street. The Pine Street location was kind of back behind Gray Hosiery Mill. That was leased property as well. So they're out of there and they're on 7th Avenue. So good thing to see another business moving to 7th Avenue, increasing business commercial traffic to 7th Avenue, which certainly we were talking, Mark, you recall a lot before the coronavirus economic shutdown and slowdown. We were talking a lot about revitalization and kind of a resurgence of 7th Avenue, and that'll still happen.
Yeah, sure,
we'll come out of this, and you'll see more businesses and activity, maybe someday tear downs and residential even. You see the police station, I think, on Ash Street will most likely move ahead. And anyway, we'll see what we had planned before.
All right. Let's move on to one of our final stories today, and that is Flat Rock Playhouse, of course, making some changes and having to move some schedules around in order to hopefully make a season work for them. So they've bumped a few shows, but they're also doing something real fun too. Talk to us about this, Bill.
Really fun, yeah. They have had to bump some of the three big ones: Steel Magnolias, A Chorus Line, and West Side Story, all moving to next season. So I guess it's good news; they're not going away entirely. Wait a year, and you'll see those. But in the meantime, I think I watched four of these Flat Rock, but these Facebook videos. Go to the Flat Rock Playhouse Facebook page, and you can see them all. Scott Treadway does a really funny one reprising his Arliss role from yeah. the Tuna shows. And a picture we have here is the Munoz family, Noel, Billy, and Neela. I don't know if you watched that one.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Performing a song in kind of a comedy sketch. It looks like in their home.
Marcy McGuigan.
McGuigan.
Yeah.
It's got a hilarious one. I guess she got a new puppy and she's practicing. She calls it practice pup. She seems to be trying to train the puppy to fetch on a beach. I don't know. Do you know where Marcy lives or what beach it is?
I can't. It's up north somewhere. I know. But it's fun. It's great fun to watch those.
They're really fun. And they'll check that out if you need something to cheer you up and regrettably it'll remind us what we're missing.
Yeah.
It also makes us happy that they're still there and they'll be back.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, Marcy McGuigan, she's on the coast of Maine up there. That's where she is.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's really doing that.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. So anything from that to how to make Elvis pancake breakfast, all sorts of great fun things on these posts. So you can still be entertained by the folks from the Playhouse. So thank you for that. And one of the reasons, of course, Bill, why they had to bump those really big shows is there'll be no apprentice program for the first time, I think, in 66 years. No apprentice program. So there's no way they can put on those big, huge shows with dancing and all of that without the support of the apprentices.
Exactly. That's a great point. Those apprentices, that's what we said. The coronavirus has claimed another tradition, and that is a great tradition, not for audiences, but certainly for the young folks that get to serve and love to serve. Many, many hundreds of them, I guess, apply to be an apprentice and an intern at the Flat Rock Playhouse, and it's a life-changing experience for just about every one of them.
Yep, you're talking to one of them right here.
Exactly. I was going to say, I think you might know that firsthand as well.
Yeah.
So that's saddening for this season, to be sure, and they're a huge part of those singing and dance ensembles.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big shows.
But again, enjoy the Facebook page of Flat Rock Playhouse anytime you get a chance. Nowadays, we need a good laugh, and they're doing a great job with that. And so we're really, really, really glad that they're doing that. Hey, Bill, let's touch on something else. This is something that people will be able to hear a little bit later on the Cube, but you've got an editorial in the Lightning this week called "We're in the Right Place for a Crisis."
Yeah, that's exactly right, Mark. I talked about the availability Monday. We talked about the live stream the following day of county officials, the county manager, two county commissioners, Bill Lapsley and Rebecca McCall, of course, the public health director, Steve Smith, the sheriff, the emergency management, emergency services director, Jimmy Brissy, just all of them. Really how amazing they are. What a good job they're doing. And we say this goes back, it seems like ages ago, we went to that and covered that EPI team meeting.
Yep.
And this was when certain people in the White House were were promising a miracle that would make all this magically vanish before it ever got here. And the epi, as we say in this editorial, the so-called epi team was dead serious about the potential for a widespread contagion. And I think it's because they did take it so seriously that maybe, just maybe, we can hope that we won't see this surge of hundreds of patients to overwhelm the capacity of our hospitals. And it's difficult, but and we say it's toward the tail end. We pine for the time BC before COVID, but we can take comfort in our elected leaders' transparency and decisive actions, and in our county's broad and effective emergency response strategy. So you can read the whole editorial, and as you mentioned, we'll record that later today, and it'll be comes on at 12:30, doesn't it?
Yes,
Monday,
it does.
Wednesday, and Friday.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And we're proud to do that. And also, we've had a number of great comments from listeners who listened to the public meeting this past Tuesday. You know, the weekly meetings that they'll have, thanking us for carrying it. But number one, being so happy that the county is doing that, so we can actively hear just exactly what our county leaders are doing on a daily basis to help make sure that Henderson County stays as healthy as possible.
I would give a shout out to all of them, as I mentioned. The Commissioner Bill Lapsley has been primarily, as far as I can tell, in public the strong advocate of this transparency.
Yeah.
And not just being transparent, but being proactive in that way and telling the public, as he says, the public should know everything we know.
Yeah.
Everything we're hearing from Jimmy Brissy, from Steve Smith, from Jay Kirby at Pardee, from Jim Bunch at Advent Health. Everything we hear, the public should hear.
Yep, absolutely. And Bill, thank you for covering it in the Lightning, as you always do. Remember, the Lightning is on the streets. It's in your mailboxes right now. Bill, how can people get a copy of their Lightning?
They can go around. I don't know if it would be. I would probably describe it as essential travel, but the great thing is you don't have to travel. You can, if you happen to be out grocery shopping or on some kind of essential trip to any of the Lightning orange racks all around the county. But now is a good time to subscribe to both the print and online issues by going to the Hendersonville Lightning and clicking on subscribe, or by calling Jan at 698-0407.
Bill, thank you so much. Look forward to having you on Lightning Thursday again next week, okay?
Mighty fine.
All right.
We'll talk to you then.
All right. Stay safe, sir. Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com.
You've been listening to Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of the Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. This program, as well as past episodes, can be heard in their entirety on our website at WTZQ.com. Click on air and scroll down to Lightning Thursday.